Welcome to Core Online. I cannot believe that we are already at Memorial Day weekend. It literally feels like just yesterday that we were celebrating Christmas and Christmas Eve together. My name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at Core. And whether you're here with us, checking us out for the very first time, or you're back for your fifth visit or your 10th visit or your 100th visit to Core, man, we just want you to know how incredibly excited we are that you have chosen to join us as we continue with part four of this series that we have been calling You're Not the Boss of Me. And throughout this series, we've been coming back every week to this one step that has the potential to change our lives. How do we say no to the emotions that compete for control? Because deep down, what every single one of us would admit is this: none of us like being controlled by anything. And yet, in light of that truth, that none of us like being controlled by anything in our lives, whether it's inside of us or outside of us, what we often lose sight of is this truth, that our emotions are constantly attempting to creep up and slip into the driver's seat of our lives, constantly trying to take back control time and time again. And our emotions are constantly competing for control in our lives in three distinct areas. You see, when we look close enough, what we will see is that our emotions are constantly competing for control when it comes to our mouths, our mood, and our actions. When our emotions have effectively taken over control in one of those three areas or multiple of those three areas, what we find are these thoughts running through our mind. When our emotions have taken control, we find ourselves in a place wondering time and time again, why did I say that? Or when our emotions have taken control, we find ourselves experiencing these moments where we wonder, why am I feeling that way? Why has my mood changed so drastically? Or when our emotions begin to take control, we find ourselves doing things that make us wonder, why did I act that way? Why did I react in that way? Why did I go down that path? Why did I do something that made me have this regret, that made me feel embarrassed? Why did I do that? What was I thinking? And you see, allowing our emotions to take control is a dangerous happening, because our emotions will always push us down a path towards becoming someone we were never created to be. Unfortunately, we all know the game. And the game goes something like this: that when our emotions begin to take control, we have become really good at monitoring our actions. We have become really good at watching what we do. Even though we're feeling a certain way and our emotions are beginning to take control, we just simply monitor our actions and what we portray on the outside. And time again, we think that's enough. But what too many of us have learned the hard way is that when our emotions effectively take control, monitoring our actions will only last for so long. It's only a matter of time before our emotions come spilling out, before what's on the inside, before what's deep down in our hearts comes spilling out on the people around us and the people that we love. And so to not be controlled by our emotions and begin to think things and act in a way in which we don't want to act, it requires us to find a way to begin to say no to those emotions in our life. We must look at those emotions of guilt and envy and fear and insecurity and be capable of saying, "You are not the boss of me." And we do that not just by monitoring our actions, but also by monitoring our heart every single day. And Jesus, when he walked on this earth, had something incredible to say about the importance of what's happening in our hearts, the importance of monitoring our hearts and making sure that what's inside of us is healthy and what's inside of us isn't creeping up and taking control of areas of our lives that we're never meant to take control of. And Jesus explains it in this passage that we have been coming back to every single week, that we've been making a basis for this series as we've moved through these last 4 weeks. We find this passage from Jesus in the book of Matthew chapter 15. And this is a perfect time, if you haven't done so already, for you to grab the weekly that maybe we sent some of you and to pull the notes page out and to follow along with us, maybe even grab a pen and fill in the blanks as we go. Or if you didn't get one of those, you can click on the icon below this video and pull up the notes page right on your computer or right on your TV screen. Or if neither of those are your style, you can simply wait as everything slides across the screen as we move through this. But this is what Jesus has to say in Matthew chapter 15 about what is going on inside of us is actually the most important element. He says this, "But the words you speak come from the heart. That's what defiles you. Your heart, the emotions that are in your heart, that's what comes out of your mouth. That's what comes out in your mood. That's what comes out in your actions. And when those emotions start to take control, that is what defiles you. That's what puts you at odds with God and at odds with other people. For from the heart come evil thoughts. And from each one of those evil thoughts, those emotions inside of us, come the actions of murder and adultery, all sexual immorality, theft, lying, and slander. These are what defile you." It was this reminder from Jesus that every regret we've encountered in our life, every mistake, every sin, it always starts from within us. It took root in our hearts and it slowly grew until eventually it took over control. And here's the problem that we all know too well if we're being ridiculously honest, is that when our emotions take control, things get out of control. When our emotions begin to take control of our lives, our mouths, our moods, our actions, things quickly get out of control. And this truth seems ridiculously clear in this one area of my life, this one occurrence that pops up again and again and again. And that occurrence is this: road rage. Every single one of us, no matter who you are, have experienced this at some point in our lives. Maybe for many of us, we have experienced road rage from the receiving end, and we've been a victim of road rage. For others of us, we have carried out road rage, and it's a good thing that we are online because your secret is safe. But it doesn't matter where you've grown up or what setting you've grown up in, we all know the reality that road rage can quickly take over control in our lives when we are driving. Maybe for you, you grew up in a big city environment, and you know the reality of road rage from rush hour traffic. And in those moments where people are cutting you off and it's congested and people are slamming on their brakes at the last minute, this road rage begins to rise up inside of you. For someone like me who has grown up in a big city and lived, or grown up in a small city and lived in a small city for most of their life, you know that road rage typically manifests itself in this way. Too often we come up on the tail of someone who finds it to be necessary to be going 27 miles per hour in a 35. And in a small city, just about every road you travel on is a two-lane road in which there's nothing you can do about it except sit behind that person and wonder, why are you going 8 miles an hour below the speed limit? And the road rage begins to rise up inside of you. We've all encountered moments on 39 where we're traveling now in a four-lane and you have a passing lane, but there are two people going side by side at 53 miles per hour in a 55. And everything inside of you is wanting to scream, "Don't you realize you're in a passing lane? Get over." Too many people we've encountered who don't know the importance of using a turn signal. And time again, this road rage rises up inside of Ben Carver. And maybe it has risen up inside of you. And there was this incredible study that was done that is funny and yet disturbing all at the same time. And in this study, it showed the effects and the reason why road rage happens in so many people. And this study found this: that people who adorn their car with things or have stickers on their car are more prone to road rage than those who do not. Isn't that incredible? And so today we thought it was a great idea for those of you who got a packet mailed to you that we would mail you a core car decal. No, I'm just kidding. We didn't do that. But those who have car stickers on their car are more prone to have road rage than those who do not. And all of you had this run through your mind immediately. Yeah, I know. It's all those people who have all those Republican bumper stickers on their car. It's all those people who have all those Democratic bumper stickers on their car who are expressing the road rage out on the road. But the next part that they found in this study is even more incredible. What they found is that it isn't the content of the stickers on their car that determine the road rage. It's the amount of stickers on their car that determine the road rage. And in that moment, it all made sense to me. Because all of us, right, you've seen those family car decals, right? The one that have a different car decal on the back of their windshield for every member of their family. And you're like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Because the families who have like their entire back windshield of their SUV adorned with 6 different children and 2 cats and a dog, you're like, I can't blame them for having a little bit of road rage. What they go through every single day entitles them to have a little bit of rage come out on the road. But the reality for every single one of us is this, is that whether we like to admit it or not, deep down inside of us, we all have a little bit of rage. We all have a little bit of anger living within us. And to that, every single one of you look at your computer screen or look at your TV and you want to respond in this way. Ben, I'm not angry. It's like when we sit in front of our counselor and they say, you seem like you're angry. And you're like, I'm not angry. And they begin to write it down on their notepad. Oh, you're not angry, but you responded in that way. You see, we're all civilized people. We want to think of ourselves as sophisticated. And so we don't want to use the word anger because anger seems like it has control of us. Anger seems like the problem lies with me. And so we would rather use the term, Ben, I'm just frustrated. Because frustrated seems responsive. I'm just responding to somebody else's mistake, to somebody else's stupidity. And in that response, my frustration slowly goes away. But when it turns into anger, when it turns into rage, that's when it seems like it's something that's festering inside of me. That's when it seems like it's something that's taken control. And no one wants anger to be the boss of them. And no one who loves you wants anger to be the boss of you, because we've all experienced the flip side of that, right? We've all been in relationships where anger or rage, or call it frustration, has taken hold of someone and we've experienced the wrath of that emotion taking control in their life. We've experienced it with our spouse. We've experienced it with our boss. And we know that when that emotion begins to take hold in our lives, it produces ridiculously unhealthy circumstances, ridiculously unhealthy reactions. It's not fun to encounter those people in our lives. And so we don't want anger to be the boss of us, but somehow it slowly happens over time in multiple facets of our lives. And let's just be ridiculously clear about something. Some of us are sitting here this morning and we're having this thought. Well, Ben, I know that anger hasn't taken over control in my life because I avoid conflict at all costs. Because I never speak up and say anything out of anger. You see, anger isn't just something that's expressed outwardly. Anger is something that for those of us who are introverts can just as easily take hold in our hearts and ruin relationships, even if we never say anything out loud. Even if we never verbally express that anger, it doesn't mean that anger hasn't won over control in our hearts and in our lives. You see, we've experienced relationships that have been ruined because of anger. We just simply walk away. We just simply avoid those relationships. We don't express that angerly outwardly, but the anger has taken over control in the way in which we react to that person and the way in which we want to be around that person. Anger isn't just something that's expressed outwardly. It's just as much as what's boiling on the inside of us. Now, what I feel is necessary here before we dive in too far is to acknowledge this reality. Not all anger is bad. In fact, there is one kind of anger that I believe with all of my heart can be ridiculously productive. And it's an anger that I call advocate anger. This is the kind of anger that is produced when we see something happening in this world that is unjust, something in this world that needs to be fixed. And that anger drives us to do something about the problem that we see in this world. You see, advocate anger is the kind of anger that has produced incredible things like women's suffrage and child labor laws and the civil rights movement. It's the kind of anger that is behind organizations like World Vision and Compassion and the A21 movement and Children's Hope Chest. You see, advocate anger centers on this. I look out into the world and I see problems that result in other people not getting what they deserve. Other people being treated unjustly. And my heart breaks around that, and it angers me on the inside so much so that it drives me to do something to change this world for the better. Unfortunately, if you're anything like me, when I look at my own life and I look at my own heart, what I often must admit is that the majority of my anger, if not all of my anger, is not rooted in my concern for whether or not someone else is getting what they deserve. The majority of my anger centers around this one thought: I'm not getting what I deserve. This is the kind of anger that has ruined too many relationships in Ben Carver's life. You see, while advocate anger is constructive, my anger that's focused around my rights is typically destructive. But James, the brother of Jesus, the guy who became the leader of the local church in Jerusalem in the first century, who got to see the local church begin to explode, and who was persecuted and even put to death because of his beliefs and his stand up for what Jesus spoke, this very guy had something to say, had incredible insight into how to regain control over our emotions and our anger. And we find him right about the steps that we can take to regain control over our anger and our emotions in the book of James, chapter 3. Starting in verse 13 is where we pick up what James writes. And he starts with this: if you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, by doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. James almost starts with a question, and some translations actually put it as a question. He starts with this question: are you wise? And to that, most of us want to say, yes, Ben, I'm wise. I want to make the wise decisions. I want to be a wise person. I want to be wise in my marriage, in my parenting. Yes, I'd consider myself to be pretty wise. And James says, so prove it. Well, how? How do I prove it? Prove it by the way you live a humble life. You see, James knew something that we often overlook. Anger and humility never go hand in hand. When anger is present, humility is void. Anger shows up when I believe I'm not getting what I deserve. Things aren't going my way. I'm late. I'm inconvenienced. I'm single. I'm broke. I need to get mine. I'm not being treated fairly. I'm. You see, so often the anger in Ben Carver's life centers around my belief, whether I say it verbally or not, my belief that the world was meant to revolve around me. And how dare the world not respond in that manner? How dare the world not give me what I feel like I deserve? And when I'm not getting what I deserve, the anger starts to rise. The frustration starts to rise. The rage starts to rise in me. Anger is so often rooted in pride and self-centeredness. Y'all okay? Anger is about selfish ambition. I need to get mine. And if I don't, someone will pay for it. Someone will get my wrath. Someone will get my anger. It might not even necessarily be the person that put me in a position of me not getting what I want. It wasn't my wife's fault that I didn't get what I want, but now I go home and all that anger and rage and frustration has built up inside of me, and now she experiences the boil over of that. It wasn't even her fault that I'm not getting what I want, but it comes boiling out on her. But James doesn't stop there. He continues with this in verse 16. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. Here James is saying where this anger and this rage has built up inside of you because of your selfishness and your jealousy that you're not getting what you deserve, what's in your heart will always come spilling out. Every evil, every regret, every mistake, every disorder will always eventually happen. But if you really want to be wise, show it by living like this. But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is also peace-loving, gentle at all times. And I feel like here, 2,000 years before cars were even invented, James had to know something about road rage because he throws this one in there. And if you really want to live a life that isn't rooted in evil, you must be willing. He uses this term that is used on the road, that is used on the highway. You must be willing to yield to others. To allow others to go first, to allow others to cut you off. You must put yourself in that position if you want to prove yourself to be wise. It is full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. And those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. Let them go first. Do good deeds to them. Instead of fighting with them, make peace with them. You see, I don't know about you, but in the moments of my life where the anger is rising up, every single thing that James just mentioned in that passage is absent in my life. When I'm angry, I don't want to be a peacemaker. I want to be a fighter. And I want my opinion to be heard. And I want the injustice that seems like it was served to me to be known. And I want to win that fight. I want to get mine. But then James really goes for his point and he launches towards the how-to. And he does so by posing another incredible question. In James chapter 4, verse 1, he poses this question. What is causing the quarrels and the fights among you? What's causing the anger that is spilling out? And to that, each of us would say, James, you're kind of missing it here. Bud, you don't fully understand. It's not what is causing the anger. It's not what's causing the quarrels and the fights in my life. It's a who, James. Like if you've ever lived this life, you know the quarrels and the fights are not a what. It's a who. It's my father-in-law. Who's always putting this undue pressure on me to live up to some sort of standard because I'm married to his daughter. It's my mom who, even though I'm an adult, seems to keep wanting to control me. It's my boss who's treating me unfairly. It's somebody else in my life. It's my spouse that keeps nagging me. It's not a who, it's a what, James. And James is like, well, that's kind of why we're talking about it. Because you're missing the point. It's not a who, it's a what. What's actually causing the problem is what's inside of you. And until you realize that the source isn't out there, but the source is in here, you will continue to allow that junk to fester inside you. It'll slowly gain control, and it will slowly creep up inside of you into the driver's seat because you've ignored it for too long, because you've been looking in the wrong place, because you've been looking at everyone else as the source instead of seeing that my heart is the actual source of the problem, and it'll be too late. See, we keep thinking the problem is with someone else out there, when really the root is that I'm mad because I'm not getting what I want. And you say, Ben, that's not it at all. Because if you heard my story and you heard why I was really angry, what you'd realize is that I'm angry because I earned it and I didn't get it. It's not about me not getting what I want. It's about me not getting what I earned. So you just want to get what you earned. Yes. So you're not getting what you want. Well, Ben, if you heard my story, you would realize that I'm angry because they promised. They promised to do something that they didn't come through on. And so you just want to get what they promised. You just want them to live up to their promises. Yes. So you're not getting what you want. Well, Ben, if you heard my story, what you would realize is that I'm angry, that I'm frustrated, because what happened just wasn't fair. And you just want to get what's fair. Yes. So you're not getting what you want. See, when we pause, and in those moments where the anger and the frustration starts rising inside of us, and we're willing to pause and remind ourselves that usually my anger is rooted in my heart because it revolves around me not getting what I want, when we can remind ourselves of that, things change. And for those of us who are parents, we should instinctively know this, right? Because if you've had two or more kids, you have encountered far too many moments of your life where you have been driving down the road and your two kids are in the back seat and they're strapped in, they're in their car seats, and a fight begins to break out between the two of them because one person did something or took something from the other person, and immediately you're like swatting into the back seat of the car and you're throwing out threats like, don't make me turn this car around, don't make me stop this car, don't make me come back there. And in those moments where the threats begin to fly, what you realize is that between your two kids, the justifications begin to flow, right? And one of them always shouts out like, she reached over the line. She's touching me. He took that from me. And your response is typically this: I don't care what either of you want. You're both in the wrong. You both think you're not getting what you want, but neither of you really want that. Neither of you really need that. And I don't think it's by coincidence that God asked us to call him Heavenly Father, because too often in our lives, we're like the little kids in the back seat who are quarreling and bickering and fighting and allowing anger to take over control because our lives revolve around, I'm not getting what I want. And that person got what I deserved, and they took it from me. And so the anger rises up inside of us. But what we must realize and what God is trying to get us to see is that the root of the problem isn't always out there. The root of the problem isn't always the other person. Oftentimes, the root of the problem is right here. And when we embrace that reality, the temperature slowly goes down. Our face doesn't get red quite as quick. We're not as quick to kick the lawnmower. The anger starts to diminish and it starts to lose control in our hearts. But James, he doesn't stop there. He says, what's causing the quarrels and the fights among you? Don't they come from the evil desires at war within you? It's actually what's happening inside of you. You see, you want what you don't have. So you scheme and kill to get it. You are jealous of what others have, but you can't get it, so you fight and wage war to take it away from them. You see, in this moment, James is saying there will come a moment in your life, in your battle with anger and rage and frustration. There will come these moments that as long as you think the problem is with him or her, you will always realize that you can't control him or her. And when you believe that the problem is solely with him or her and you can't control what they do, what they say, how they act, you will feel justified in no longer controlling yourself. Hello! When you think the problem is with them and you can't control them, you will always justify the reality that maybe you don't need to control yourself either. And James is saying, don't you realize every ingredient for murder is inside of you? And I'm not just talking about physically murdering and harming someone. You see, you have the potential to kill. When anger rises up, you murder their reputation, right? We've all been there. We've all done that. That's why we love gossip. You humiliate them and you kill their confidence. You degrade them and kill their self-worth. And you feed their shame and their guilt. You believe that when your anger rises up, if you can kill their reputation, if you can kill their standing, somehow it makes you feel elevated and feels better about yourself. But wise people, mature people, healthy people are able to stop when the anger starts to rise and remind themselves, I am part of the problem. The reason I'm angry is because I'm not getting what I want. But check this out. What if life isn't always about getting what I want? What if our lives actually aren't best when we always get what we want? Maybe the problem is that there is a flaw within me that keeps making me believe that this world is supposed to revolve around me. What would change if we stopped and we acknowledged that my anger and frustration is typically there because of a problem within my own heart? And I thought it'd be fun this morning to challenge many of us to something. For those of you who are watching and you're married, or those of you who are watching and you have a roommate, and arguments and quarrels oftentimes begin to rise up between you and someone else. And maybe you have a sibling that you're in constant contact with, and the fights and the quarrels oftentimes begin to happen. I thought it'd be fun to challenge you to this. The next time you find yourself in an argument and things begin to become heated between the two of you, what if one of you in that moment, in the middle of that argument, was willing to stop and say this to the other person, dead cold in the middle of the argument? You know what part of the problem is, don't you? I'm not getting what I want. You look the other person, you look your spouse in the eye, and you say, you know what part of the problem is, right? You know why we're having this argument, right? Because I'm not getting what I want. And here's the incredible thing. If you don't like fights and arguments, there's really no reply to that, right? There's not a good comeback when you come out and admit that about yourself and see that in yourself. You see, I'm not always the whole problem, but typically it's a bigger part of the problem than what we like to admit. But if we will, those are the moments when we start to become wise. Those are the moments when we start to become healthy. Those are the moments where we start to take back control. And so let me finish with this. Let me finish with this question. What's your relationship with anger? Like, just between you and yourself, in your own mind and your own heart, what would it look like to answer that question? What's your relationship with anger? Do you let it boss you around? Do you let it take control of your mouth or your mood or your actions? And if so, as you look back on the broken relationships of your life, on the moments that haven't gone the way you wanted them to and are filled with regrets and embarrassment because you let the anger take control in places it probably shouldn't have, the question that remains is this: aren't we ready for something better? Now, here's what's cool. Better is possible. Anger doesn't have to stay in the driver's seat. We can have better. We can push it out and start to take back control. But in order to do that, we must stop being the little kids in the back seat who are mad because we're not getting what we want all the time. And I've said this every single week of this series. I have finished in this way, and today is no different. You see, if we consider ourselves to be a Christ follower, if we consider ourselves to be a Jesus follower, not only are our emotions not supposed to be the boss of us, guess what? We already have a boss. And what's so incredible is that our boss, Jesus Christ, didn't always get everything he wanted. He said no to himself so that he could give you what you needed most. He said no to his comfort to die on a cross so that you and I could experience a better life. And Paul explains it so perfectly in Philippians chapter 2, verse 6. He says, though he was God, he's talking about Jesus, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. That was his right. That's what he deserved. He could have stayed in equality with God, but instead he gave up his divine privileges. What was fair to him, what he was due, what he earned, he gave it up. And he took on the humble position of a slave. He yielded to you and to me. He placed himself beneath us. And if you want to have the best life possible, he continues, or really right before that in verse 5, he says, if you want to live the best life, you must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. You want to be in control? You must have the same attitude that Christ had. Well, how do I live like that? Be humble. Thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interest, but take an interest in others too. You see, my boss, this guy named Jesus, will always nudge us away from self-centeredness and arrogance. In his attempt to nudge us away from self-centeredness and arrogance, he will always nudge us towards other-centeredness and humility. And when we do this, our impact gets bigger and our lives get better. And when we do that, when we put self-centeredness and pride off to the side and we allow other-centeredness and humility to take over control, those are the moments in our lives where we are capable of looking anger in the eye and saying this: you are not the boss of me. Will you pray with me? Father, this morning, for so many of us, whether we like to admit it or not, we have allowed anger and frustration to slowly slip into the driver's seat of our lives. We've allowed it to destroy relationships. We've allowed it to make us someone we were never created to be. God, that anger in us has changed the way in which we look at this world. It's revolved our lives around this thought of, I'm not getting what I want. And the world is supposed to revolve around me. And when it doesn't, that's when anger takes control. But what if we follow the lead of your Son, who gave us an example of the best life possible, and that life was lived in such a way that it didn't revolve around self-centeredness and arrogance, but it revolved around other-centeredness and humility. That sometimes not getting what I want is actually the best option. But to do that, we must monitor our hearts. And this morning, God, I just pray, as I do so many weeks, for myself, for every person watching and listening this morning, that we would step forward with courage, because it won't be easy to push anger out of the driver's seat, but that we will have the courage to look anger in the eye, to start taking the steps that prove, anger, you are not the boss of me. We thank you for your help in that. It's in your name we pray. Amen. So let me finish with this. For those of you who are looking at that challenge that I presented, of stopping in the middle of an argument when the anger is rising and saying this, do you know what the problem is, don't you? I'm not getting what I want. You see, the wisest people, the most mature people, the healthiest people are the ones who step forward and say it first. I thought we'd finish with a little bit of healthy competition. Are you mature enough to go first? And I can only speak from a guy's perspective. Guys, oftentimes the reason we don't go first, the reason Ben Carver doesn't go first, is simply because of pride. And so in your relationships, in your life, when you feel the anger rising, are you wise enough? Are you mature enough? Are you healthy enough to admit, I'm not getting what I want? But my life isn't always about me getting everything I want. Hey, thanks so much for being here this morning. Lastly, I want to challenge you with this. Next week, we are wrapping up this series, You're Not the Boss of Me. And we're going to be talking about the emotion of fear that so easily grips our heart. And it's going to be so incredibly relevant and practical to what every single one of us are walking through right now. And so next week is a week that you do not want to miss. Make sure you are back here Sunday, May 31st for another installment of Core Online. Thanks so much. Have a great rest of your day.